Welcome to episode 3 of Contagion Community, the new health equity podcast where we talk with experts about the social factors that create and widen infectious disease disparities. I'm Nina Cosden, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Brianna Norton. Dr. Norton was integral in opening the Montefiore New York Harm Reduction Educators Clinic, an alternative healthcare facility in East Harlem that serves marginalized, low-income people who use drugs.
There's a tremendous amount of stigma in the traditional healthcare system when it comes to people who use drugs. People who use drugs feel that they're just not respected, they're not listened to, they're not heard, and they're really not seen as, you know, equal human beings.
The Montefiore Nyrie Clinic is a medical facility embedded within the community, giving marginalized people trustworthy, comprehensive, and dignified healthcare. Thanks for joining us. And if you haven't already, be sure to check out our first 2 episodes on vaccine inequity, available on the Contagion Live website and wherever you get your podcasts. Dr. Norton, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you start by sharing a bit about yourself and your medical background?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. So I have been in addiction medicine for almost 10 years now, but I really came into the field of substance use disorder treatment through infectious diseases. So when I was training down at Duke University, my focus was actually on treating HIV patients. But at that time, became aware to us that these patients, about a quarter or more, were also co-infected with hepatitis C. And unfortunately, our colleagues in the hepatology department were not super eager to treat hepatitis C at that time. And so as an infectious disease physician, I started treating my HIV patients for their active hepatitis C infection as well. And the majority of the people who had hepatitis C at that time really acquired it through injection drug use. And so when I came to Montefiore Medical Center, I actually joined the internal medicine division, not the infectious diseases division, despite my training, because with the pure goal of bringing HIV and hepatitis treatment into our community-based centers in the Bronx to really reduce the barriers for people with these infectious diseases, people who are often very marginalized, to reduce the barriers to getting them into specialty care and to offer this type of treatment within the community-based clinics that they were already attending. The issue is really the overwhelming majority of people who have hepatitis C are either current or former injection drug users. And it became clear to me that if I really wanted to treat the entire patient, that I could not ignore the substance use disorder and that they also had. And so I, with the help of my mentorship of my colleagues, programs through SAMHSA, I did indeed get my buprenorphine waiver and started treating patients for their opioid use disorder in primary care with buprenorphine. And also reached out to my local harm reduction community-based organizations such as syringe service programs to really also be able to refer patients who were not ready for substance use disorder treatment to at least have the skills and the tools to reduce their chance of reinfection and to increase their safety as they were using drugs. And so my entire focus really now is to treat people who use drugs holistically from many different angles, in settings that have the least barriers to care and treatment, and with the least stigmatizing environments as well.
That's really interesting. And I noticed you mentioned treating the entire patient and the whole patient, and you're a doctor of osteopathic medicine as opposed to an MD. So I was wondering if you could talk about how you chose to become a DO and what that means to you, because I know that's sometimes linked to a holistic understanding of care.
Yeah, sure. So actually, when I was growing up, my family physician was a DO or a doctor of osteopathic medicine. And so I had quite a lot of exposure to that type of medical treatment. And like you said, the approach to osteopathic medicine is really combining what we consider traditional allopathic medicine with really adjunctive and alternative therapies that are able to treat the entire patient. And so we're not just going to give you, Tylenol for your back pain, but maybe we're also going to be able to do physical therapy, chiropractic therapy, lymphatic drainage, other adjunctive treatments that do more than just giving someone a pill. And so the whole philosophy of osteopathic medicine is seeing the patient as a whole rather than in individual parts. And I definitely believe it's an asset in my practice today because I'm open to a spectrum of treatments rather than just sort of one specific guideline-based treatment. And I think it allows us to be very patient-centered when we're approached, when I'm approaching care of my patient.
Could you talk about the mission of the New York Harm Reduction Educators and how that led you to opening your clinic?
Sure. So NYHRE, which is the New York Harm Reduction Educators, is a drop-in center, a syringe service program, and an overdose prevention center located in East Harlem and also having vans throughout the Bronx. And their entire mission really is the focus on the dignity and health of people who use drugs and sex workers. And they provide a multitude of services, including syringe exchange and other drug paraphernalia exchange, Narcan distribution and overdose reversals, peer support, peer education, holistic health, including acupuncture, and least also a place for community and respite for patients who often don't have a lot of other support in their lives. And the people who use NYHRE services are, really some of the most marginalized in the nation. People who are using drugs, sex workers, people experiencing homelessness, living in poverty, lived experience of trauma. And as such, they're also people who have some of the highest barriers to receiving many services, including health care.
So when you talk about some of that stigma that these people experience, can you talk a little bit to where that comes from?
Yeah. So, there's many reasons that people who use drugs have a reduced access to healthcare. Some of it is just very, very logistical and have to do with the social determinants of health. Like if people don't have money for transportation, if people don't, they can't get to healthcare. If people don't have health insurance, they can't receive healthcare. If people have a ton of competing priorities, including like hunger, they may not be able to make that like very small window of time that the traditional healthcare system allows, right? That the, your 1:15 appointment that you can't be late for. But then on top of the sort of the social determinants of health, there just is an entire, there's a tremendous amount of stigma in the traditional healthcare system when it comes to people who use drugs. And the overarching feeling is just that, that people who use drugs feel that they're just not respected, they're not listened to, they're not heard, and that they're really not seen as, equal human beings. And, it is very difficult to then trust a physician sitting in front of you if you feel like that person, that physician, is not really seeing you as an equal human being. And who would really see their doctor if they felt like their doctor really didn't support or hear them? And this really plays out in many different ways. Like, first of all, unfortunately, many physicians think that, if a person's using drugs, then they don't care about their health. And that just is entirely not true. I work very closely with people who use drugs. And just because they use drugs doesn't mean they don't care of the other health concerns that they might have. This is really true with like anyone. Like if someone has diabetes, and yet they continue to eat dessert, even though it's bad for them. We don't just entirely say, oh, well, then they don't care about anything in their body. You know, if someone is, you know, doesn't go to the gym, that doesn't mean they don't care about their blood pressure, you know, and it's the same thing. It's just, there's this stigma that if you're using drugs, you don't care about your whole body. And it's just not true. But it's very difficult when the doctor sitting in front of you, who's supposed to take care of you, has that feeling. You know, the other issue is that often the doctor just, or the clinician just focuses entirely and narrowly on the person stopping drugs, rather than say what the person actually came into the office to prioritize. So if the person comes into the office with a toothache or with a foot ulcer from their diabetes, and the only thing the physician or clinician cares about is saying, when are you gonna stop using drugs? That patient is just does not feel heard, and they also don't feel like they're seen or their priorities are being heard or taken care of. And then I guess in a very specific way, you know, the other real big problem is that in this population, there is not good pain control. So physicians and clinicians really have a stigma against treating people's pain if that person is a person who uses drugs. And so this is very scary. So if a person who uses drugs, you know, goes into the emergency room for a very intense conditioning, you know, like a diabetic foot ulcer, a broken bone, they are so scared that despite having something that actually is causing a ton of pain, that emergency room doctor, that hospital room doctor is not going to adequately treat the pain. And there certainly is research to state this because they're a person who uses drugs. And so it just becomes very difficult for these people to get sort of dignified care in the way that other people do in the traditional healthcare system.
Right. And you spoke to this a little bit, but many people who use injection drugs also experience homelessness or any other things that may limit their care. So how do you personally go about treating this patient group?
Yeah, so I think what we did is we brought, you know, expert, academic, really high quality care to them, meaning we reduced the barriers to access to healthcare by embedding a clinic within the community-based organization that people who are using drugs, people, you know, of which, you know, nearly 50% are experiencing homelessness, you know, are then able to get care where they're already seeking services. We also are extreme, we treat people with dignity. We treat people with love and kindness. And these people, you have to remember, people who use drugs are abundant throughout the world. This is not a marginalized, you know, this is not a small group of people. It is very common, drug use is very common. These are people's brothers, you know, and family members, they're people's sisters and mothers. And we really believe it is exceptionally important to treat these people with dignity the way we would treat anybody, and with love and kindness. And so at the clinic, we offer Hep C treatment, HIV treatment. We do PEP and PrEP. We also do opioid use disorder treatment with buprenorphine. But I think our approach is that, you know, we are just trying to keep people safe, or as safe as they can be, until they're ready to go into substance use disorder treatment. You know, but one of the things I always say is you cannot get someone into treatment if they're not alive. And so our goal is to keep people healthy and alive until they are ready to go into treatment. And they deserve that. We've treated like over 300 unique individuals in our clinic at the Syringe Exchange Program. About 120 have started buprenorphine. About over 50 have entered our Hep C program. We have dozens of patients on PrEP to prevent HIV acquisition. And what we also do is we really try to get the patient who has often had terrible experiences with the healthcare system. We are trying to get people comfortable again with talking to a doctor, seeing a doctor, feeling that they can be honest with the doctor. so that once they're with us for, say, you know, 6 months or a year, they're doing well, they feel dignified, and they're getting the treatment they need. Our hope is that we can then get them, as people age, you know, and need more and more healthcare, we can get them into the larger healthcare system in a way that they feel empowered long term.
And you mentioned syringe service programs earlier. These are even now controversial or even politicized. So how would you describe the purpose and benefits of syringe service programs?
So first of all, decades of research have shown that syringe service programs are safe. They're really effective at improving health outcomes, reducing death, you know, without actually increasing drug use. And, you know, and that's like 30 years of research. So there's really good data to support the benefits of syringe cervix programs. You know, they're also associated with an estimated 50% reduction in HIV and hep C incidence or acquisition. And if you combine syringe service programs with substance use disorder treatment, which is what we're doing at our clinic with buprenorphine, you can actually reduce HIV and hep C by 2/3. So they are wonderful in reducing the acquisition of HIV and hep C within a person who uses drugs himself, within that community, but then within the community at large. We have to remember that if we are reducing HIV in a small community, that's reducing that for public health in general. Okay, we don't, you know, because we all don't live in bubbles. So really what a syringe service program offers people is it offers them a space to use drugs in a safer way. So we are never going to be able to live in a world where zero people use drugs. That is not, that goal is too lofty. It will not happen. But what we can do then is treat the people who are using drugs with respect and dignity and allow them to means so that they don't end up getting chronic conditions that are dangerous, that lead to death, and by the way, that are very costly to treat. The other thing the syringe service program does is we give out Narcan. Narcan is a medication that reduces overdose. You know, overdose, people, there is an increase in overdose in our country and certainly in New York City where I practice, and Narcan can reverse an overdose and keep a person alive. So we are ourselves at the syringe service program reduce overdoses. We empower everyone to carry Narcan on them. And we have people that go into the streets and other places where people are using drugs to ensure that we reduce as many overdoses as possible and keep our community and loved ones alive. And furthermore, we offer support. You know, we do HIV and hep C testing. We do educational groups. We do peer support. We have holistic healthcare where we try to teach people how to do meditation and breathing, how to live healthy lives. And so it's a syringe service programs are a wonderful way in order to empower people to live healthier lives, empower people to go into substance use disorder treatment, and also to have the support and dignity they need to seek the care that they deserve. And I will say that syringe service programs are also super good at referring people to care that they might not have at their exact location. So referring people to methadone, referring people to psychiatric care, referring people to traditional primary care. So they really are essential to ending the HIV and hep C epidemics, and they are essential and ending the opioid overdose epidemic.
And on that point, can you explain what it means to say that the US is experiencing an opioid epidemic?
Unfortunately, we have now reached a point in the United States where our annual overdose deaths, unintentional overdose deaths, is greater than 100,000. And you know, though like the COVID pandemic has been devastating and it really has drawn our attention away from these opioid related deaths, they unfortunately have not only not gone away, they've actually worsened. And so our communities nationwide citywide, suburban, country are experiencing an increase in deaths related to opioids. So this is a tremendous, you know, this is a tremendous problem and a tremendous cause of mortality. It's actually reduced our age-related deaths in this country. It has also really led to an eye-opening understanding of what we are going to need to do in order to keep people alive. And so for the first time in our country, where syringe services have been notoriously politicized and even some made illegal, for the first time in our nation's history, we are increasing syringe service programs and funding syringe service programs both on local and national levels, because we know they work and it's the only way, really way to save our family members. One of the things I do want to say is that I work in New York City and the Bronx, and you know, our communities have been really experiencing the devastation of drug use, particularly opioids, for decades. And so although the media has only really recently started talking about the devastation of opioids and the opioid epidemic, I will say for our Black and Brown community members living in the Bronx and New York City, they really have been experiencing this quite some time prior to this. And I do wanna give a head nod to that, because the communities have been dealing often really alone, without help and without resources for quite some time.
And you mentioned Hep C and HIV. So could you speak a little more to the overlap between injection drug use and infectious disease?
You know, infectious disease, much of infectious disease is about bloodborne infections, including HIV and Hep C. And the, you know, and so when people who inject drugs don't have the resources to have safe, clean injecting equipment, they often will share equipment. And this is how people acquire various bloodborne illnesses, such as HIV and hepatitis C. So currently, the overwhelming majority of new Hep C infections are due to injection drug use. And the nation has seen like a nearly fourfold increase in Hep C cases from 2010, to current. Though HIV has been on the decline, unfortunately, we have now also seen small HIV outbreaks in communities of people injecting drugs. And really, people who inject drugs also have a much greater likelihood of developing sort of invasive staph infections such as MRSA due to injecting in our skin, which has staph bacteria on it. So increase in abscesses and endocarditis, increases in bloodborne illnesses. But I will say, and so we have to, one, advocate for the quick and immediate treatment when people acquire these infections in this community. But we also have to advocate for the means to prevent these infectious diseases among the community, and that is through syringe service programs and the also efficient and destigmatizing treatment of substance use disorder in settings such as community-based clinics and community-based organizations, so that people can easily access the treatment they need to reduce these type of infections.
Do you have any long-term goals for the Montefiore Nyeri Clinic?
You know, I think, well, one is that more of these clinics open throughout the country. And as we see these syringe service programs, starting and also becoming expanding, particularly say in our suburbs or in some of our more rural settings where healthcare in general is difficult to access. I really think that being able to offer you know, drug user specific healthcare in settings where people feel comfortable, it should be a long-term goal and should be highly funded. The other thing for our clinic is I do hope to improve our long-term sustainable funding so that we can become just a lot more robust. We can add providers. Right now we're treating patients 3 days a week. It would be wonderful to treat patients 5 days a week to increase our hours. It would be lovely to be able to have what I feel like are the resources to actually treat people for primary care long-term, rather than have to refer them at some point into the larger healthcare system. And so it would be great to improve and increase the funding of these really unique, innovative and life-saving programs, not only for us, but for multiple settings throughout the country. I think I would just make a call for everybody to really improve their understanding of harm reduction in general, and to open their eyes to loving and treating their community members who use drugs with true dignity. Because we all, as human beings, deserve that respect. And unfortunately, the stigma of drug use has really taken away some of the love that these communities deserve. And that has reduced their access to all sorts of services, including healthcare, that all people deserve. So I also think that it's important for people to think about harm reduction as something that's not really unique to drug use, right? Like, we use harm reduction all the time. Like I was saying previously, if someone has diabetes, we don't tell them, like, you can never again eat ice cream your entire life. Instead, we use a harm reduction approach where we say, let's try to think how we can reduce your harms. If you're having ice cream 5 days a week, let's put it down to two. That just that thought process is exactly harm reduction. What we're saying is, if you're currently not going to stop using drugs at this very moment, let's just give you the tools to use in a way that is safer, that we can reduce harm. And this is not a new concept. It's just people stigmatize the concept when it's related to drug use, even though we don't do it in so many other chronic diseases. Mm-hmm.
What infectious disease disparities do you want covered next? We want to hear from you, so please feel free to send feedback to me at ncosdon@mjhlifesciences.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Contagion Community.